Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff, and this is the No Look Pass. And across from me, I have my cohort in crime, Mr. Brian Hawkins. Why don't you say hello there, Brian?
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the No Look Pass.
If this is your first time joining us, we talk sports, and we enjoy our conversations with sports so much that we talk about sports pretty much when we're not on the microphone. So this is just an extension of what we like to talk about normally when we're just hanging out here at Chris Radio. We will get right into it with, let's start with our baseball team since there's been some trades and whatnot. We can get the Cubs and White Sox out of the way. To probably a chagrin for a couple Cubs fans, Dexter Fowler has signed with the Cardinals. What do you think this does? Does this move make you feel like the Cardinals are trying to? Do they have enough? Like, are they trying to get themselves back in contention, or do they still have a long way to go before they're even considered in the same breath as the Cubs in the division?
Well, no, I definitely think they're trying to get back into contention. I don't think they're quite there to match up with the Cubs yet. Depends on what kind of pitching they get. But also, I think it's a way for them to sort of get back at the Cubs for signing Jason Hayward.
Yes, I agree. Which is actually kind of funny because I actually felt like Dexter Fowler was the better player than Hayward last year. So maybe the Cardinals get a little bit of better deal getting Mr. Fowler. What else do you see with the Cubs? I think I saw something that they picked up a pitcher.
Yeah, they did. They got a pitcher. They've been doing that. His name escapes me at the moment, but they've been loading up on pitching. And I guess that's good. Uh-huh. They want to make sure that they stay on top of that, because that's the key to winning, as you know, in baseball, is to have good pitching and good defense.
Well, I know they picked up Davies, and we might have talked about that last week, but they also, wasn't it Montgomery? Well, I know they were looking at Montgomery as one of the potential pitchers that they were looking at to replace, I want to say it was Hamill, as the starter. I don't know if that went through. I know that was just talk a couple days ago. So that one I'm not entirely positive about. But on the, was there any other Cubs or big news there in the National League side of things?
Well, I don't know if we talked about it, but they signed John Jay. And
we did not talk about that.
And he will be, I guess, looked at as a possible leadoff guy to replace Dexter Fowler. And they're also looking at Almeida. So one of those two guys will handle the job, or maybe both of them, depending upon whether or not it's a lefty or a righty on the mound.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think it was MLB Network was talking about who could potentially take off that leadoff for the Cubs. And a couple of them thought that Schwarber could be a leadoff guy. I'm not entirely sure that would be what the Cubs would want. I think Schwarber has good amount of power and seems to be really clutch to be having him somewhere deeper in the order to bring in some runs. He is consistent. He seems to hit the ball a lot and get on base a lot. So that is what you want from your leadoff guy. But I think he has more power and more pop in the bat than what you would normally see for a leadoff guy. What do you think about the Schwarber potentially being the leadoff guy?
No, I don't think that would be the right move. I think he's more valuable further down in the order.
Right.
But, you know, this is, I think, a big problem for the Cubs because leadoff is a very important spot, and they've gotten great play from Fowler the last couple of years. And so it gets their entire offense started. So they have to have somebody who can get on base and do the kinds of things that Fowler did. And, you know, I'm not so sure Almeida or John Jay can do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. That is definitely something
Mora,
that...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Both teams have to actually address the leadoff position now. I think this happened after our show on Wednesday, but Adam Eaton was ended up traded to the Nationals.
For more prospects.
For a couple of prospects. And the White Sox have made some interesting moves with... They got the better end of the deal, at least some people feel, with letting Adam Eaton go and the prospects that they've gotten, because they feel Adam Eaton was just a okay player, not a great player. So they feel like they potentially have gotten more out of the Adam Eaton deal than they did out of the Sale deal, but still... we don't really know what the Sox have, because these are all young players that are not really tested, and prospects fall through on a regular basis. So this is a team that is going to be difficult to watch at least for 1-2 years, I would say, until these prospects start to pay off. Or I don't know if they're planning on using them as trade pieces for something else at some point, but they've definitely given away a lot just with getting a Sale away. So I don't know. You did say that the Sox picked up a pitcher to replace Sale, to both me and you kind of scratched our heads at. Who'd they pick up?
Well, first of all, with Adam Eaton, you know, I think a couple times a year, maybe more than that, he did get hot, and he did.
This is true.
He did play well as a leadoff hitter.
Yes.
And that's why they acquired him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he was a serviceable player. And now they've created a hole for themselves. Who's going to lead off? We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to answer your question, and this makes to my, you know, we neither one of us, I think, if I recall, didn't like the Chris Sale trade.
Right.
And this is sort of underscores how I think the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So mm-hmm. they go out and they get pitcher Derek Holland to take Sale's place in the rotation. Now, Holland is 30 years old, and they got they gave him a one-year deal, $6 million, with a dollar more in incentive bonuses. I'm not really sure understanding what that means.
Mm-hmm.
But here's a guy who was 7-9 with a 4.95 ERA and 22 appearances, including 20 starts. He had 107 in the third innings last season for the Rangers, who declined his $11 million option after last season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's had 4 shutouts, which led the American League in 2011.
Okay.
And he struck out a career best 189 in 213 innings in 2013. So what have you done for me lately? The 8-year veteran had spent his entire career with the Rangers, for whom he was 62-50 with a 4.35 ERA and 985 innings. Now, so the rotation's going to look like Holland, Jose Quintana, Carlos Rodon, Miguel Gonzalez, and James Shields.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the question. Why would you give up Chris Sale, who's obviously a better pitcher, to get this guy, and then you get in return a player who won't even start the season on the major league team? He's going to start in the minors, and who knows how long it'll be before he gets called up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still developing. He's got talent. But, you know, what this is starting to look like to me is a situation with the Cubs a few years ago when they got Starlin Castro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the rap on this Yoan Moncada is that sometimes he makes bad decisions and doesn't have to keep his head in the game, you know, makes in terms of the plays that he makes in the field. So who does that sound like?
Zambrano, actually.
And also Starlin Castro, that was the problem mm-hmm. with him. That's why Dale Swaim and him has had a butting of heads, is that sometimes he would not have his head in the game and make the wrong play because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this guy was up in the minors or up in the big league team with Boston
mm-hmm.
in September this past season when they were in the heat of a race against the Blue Jays. And, you know, he was just okay. And he didn't light the world on fire. Now, can this guy be a difference maker in terms of putting the White Sox over or making them a better team? I don't think so. I think, it's a kind of situation like when the White Sox brought up Alexi Ramirez. He came up, he was a hot prospect. Everybody thought that this guy has really got great potential, is going to be a superstar. And because of the losing and more losing and more losing, eventually the tarnish or the sparkle fell off of Alexi Ramirez's mm-hmm. career, and he winds up getting traded to the Padres. So to me, it seems like the same kind of thing will happen with this guy, Yoan Moncada. But, even if he does develop into a superstar, by the time the White Sox get other players to go with him, will it be a situation where they're thinking, well, maybe we could move on from this guy? Mm-hmm. And, I don't understand.
I think the biggest thing that seemed to help Alexi Ramirez was Omar Vizquel. The year that Omar Vizquel came in, the veteran, kind of taught him a few things. It seemed like that following year was the best year that Alexi Ramirez had. And I wonder if the Sox bring in, one or two of these guys who have been around the block a few times, that veteran leadership to kind of teach these younger kids. I could see a potential that this is where the Sox kind of go, is you'll see a lot of really, really young talent with a few key older guys that are kind of what you're seeing with the Bulls, with Dwayne Wade helping with Butler's development this year. I think you're going to see something similar with the Sox of bringing in some of these older players that are at the back end of their career to show these younger guys how to play the game, how to prepare. Because otherwise, if you just have all these young players, you don't really have anyone teaching them how to be a professional baseball player. You just basically have a minor league team playing major league baseball, which never goes well. So I'm willing to kind of be a little bit patient and see what the rest of this, off-season brings. We are going to have these next couple months where we might see a couple more moves. Nothing as big as what we saw with the sale going. I don't think they're going to move Quintana. I think they feel like he's young enough and for them to still build around him. That with Sale, they felt like by the time that they got good, he would already be maybe in his early 30s and maybe out of, pretty much out of his prime. And they maybe feel like Quintana will be more in his prime still by the time that they feel whatever their time frame is. I don't see Quintana going anywhere, but it wouldn't surprise me. They got rid of Sale, and the Sox seem to be wanting to get as many prospects as possible and hope a few of these guys hit. So, I don't know. We'll see. It's a lot of question marks for the Sox for sure. The Cubs are going to be, once again, the team that everybody's going to be paying attention to here in Chicago. But hopefully in a couple of years, we'll start to see something with the Sox that they will be a team that people will want to pay attention to. Because when they're good, the people come out. When they're bad, it's a ghost town at the longer U.S. Cellular, but Guaranteed Rate Field.
Yeah. Well, just to pick up on what you mentioned, Yoan Moncada, he did have a veteran example to follow when mm-hmm. he was in Boston. That was David Ortiz. Reportedly, they were very close, and Ortiz mm-hmm. did give him a lot of information about playing in the bigs. Whether or not he'll have that with the White Sox, depending on who they keep and trade, mm-hmm. you don't know. But another thing, Brian's twisted mind looking at the situation, mm-hmm. it's very convenient that they decided to break up the team, because what if they basically kept the team intact, maybe making a move here or there, mm-hmm. and bring back basically the same team. And then Renteria takes that club and, they play like they played for the first 10 games throughout the entire season. Mm-hmm. So then that looks like, some sports reporter is going to make the comparison that they waited too long to get rid of Rodman. And this whole loyalty thing that Reinsdorf talks about it's good, but they need to be more proactive in making baseball decisions.
Right.
This way, they can avoid all of that, if it were to develop, all of that controversy and criticism. But another thing that bothers me is that you have a guy in Rick Hahn who, for the past, what, five seasons, all the teams that he built, and basically they didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're going to allow him to rebuild your team with prospects. And it seems like his picker hasn't been all that great.
Right.
To this point. So, you know, that's just another worrisome point. Is this the guy that you want rebuilding your team with young players and picking prospects?
Yeah, it's not been the greatest of history with Rick Hahn. You know, other than the few good pitchers that we've had.
Well, they're good with pitching.
Yep. So we'll see. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a, you know, Major League situation where the Cubs are the Indians of the movie Major League.
Well, I would have thought that would have been more possible if they, you know, kept the team they had last year closer intact. But
yeah.
Now it looks like we're going to be on a losing end for maybe, what, 2, 3, maybe 4 or 5 years? I don't know.
Yeah, I would say it's probably around the 3-year mark. I think that's realistically, when they're doing a rebuild like this, they are hoping within that like third year that you start to see these prospects starting to turn that corner. These first 2 years are going to be really, really rough. So, yeah, we'll see what happens and what pieces they continue to keep and which ones they get rid of over this rebuild. We'll see if Abreu ends up being part of that or how long Frazier will be with us. But like I said, I think that the safest piece, at least my gut feeling tells me that Quintana is probably the safest one because of his youth, how consistent he is. I feel he is the one that they potentially want, feel like they could build a pitching staff, a team around, is him as that key piece.
Right. And, you know, but, you know, to me, looking at it, they've lost so much over the last few years. Don't know if I have the stamina to go through, you know, 2, 3 more years of the same thing.
It is definitely something that should have been done a while ago. There was one of the guys on, I want to say it was ESPN, said that this should have probably been done like 2010. Like they're 6 years behind where they should have done these changes.
Mm-hmm.
And this year should have been the year where they should have been, you know, if they did an actual rebuild in 2010, you know, last year or this year would have been the year where you would have saw all of those moves hopefully paying off and this team being a, you know, a stalwart. But they didn't make any moves. They basically just kept trying to piecemeal this team together, and it hasn't paid off, and now they're tearing it all down and building it up again where people are already frustrated with this team as it is and want there to be changes from the top first.
Well, you know, they didn't do that. They still have the same vice president,
right,
general manager.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's been the White Sox M.O. when Jerry Reinsdorf and Eddie Einhorn bought the team, what was that, in 81, I think. First thing they did was they went out and they got Carlton Fisk. So that brought some respectability to the team. And that's how they've always built their teams, by bringing in free agents and then also using what players they could bring up through the system.
Right.
So this represents a major change in how they've built their teams over the years. And from what I've been reading and gathering, you know, this was a major change for their organization.
Right.
So I hope it goes well.
Yeah. Hopefully. Hopefully the experiment does go well for them. It is definitely uncharted territory for the Sox. Anything else baseball-wise that you want to touch on? Or should we move on to one of our other teams?
No, I think we're good on baseball.
Okay. We'll touch on, let's just get the bad stuff out of the way. Let's go with the Bears.
Stop Bears.
They lost another one. They had the game. It seemed like they could have won that game. What did you see with the Bears this weekend there, Brian?
I saw Josh Bellamy drop more passes. I hate to pick on the guy, but, you know, what is that? Two games where he could have, the Bears could have, in one game, tied because he dropped a touchdown. And if he caught the pass this past weekend, they could have been in position to tie the game up with a field goal and continue to go on. Mm-hmm. That's what I've seen. Other than that, I like the defense and where it is. I think he can get better. I like Matt Barkley. At times, he makes me think of Tom Brady. Not that he is Tom Brady, mm-hmm. But he's very accurate with the pass. If they get their offensive line healthy and healthy in general all the way around, and if they can keep their wide receivers healthy. This is the thing about the Bears. If you look at their season, the games that they've lost, what, the 10 games, mm-hmm. they had a chance to win, if not all, I think all of those games. They, at one point, they were either leading or in a position to come back and win, but they didn't.
I think there was only two games in that I can remember that they weren't, that basically that weren't very close.
Right.
And it was the Eagles and the Cowboys. Those were the two that I can remember that were kind of, they didn't seem to be in that game.
And, yeah. And mm-hmm. so if you, you know, flip that record and they won those games that they should have won,
yep.
you're looking at a different team. So, you know, I've been hearing and reading about, oh, should Fangio go? Should you bring Fox back? I think the Bears shouldn't panic. I don't think that they're that far away. They just need to learn to close out games. And you look at other teams, namely your favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Last year, their record not so great. This year, they're world beaters, and that was only a season removed. So yeah, I think it's possible, and it's happened before, that teams can turn it around this season. Maybe they need more... need to play together more than they have in order to gel as a team and figure some things out. So I don't think they need to push the panic button.
I agree. I definitely think it has nothing to do with John Fox, because you see this team trying to compete and they're competing with these teams. Like, they're in these games and they're not getting blown out. You're not seeing like horrendously stupid mistakes. Like, these guys are in the positions that they're supposed to be in to make the plays. It's just that right now, talent wise, they're just beat up. It's just when you're playing with like an extremely injured team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, you look at the receivers they're using, they're down to their second or third string tight end. They're down to their third, fourth, and fifth wide receivers. Like, the running backs have been getting injured throughout the season, so it's, and then they're on their third quarterback. So it's like, you look at this team, and it's really, the injuries on the offensive side of the ball has really, really been detrimental for them to be able to consistently move the ball, and they're doing an okay job, even with the pieces that they have. So it's just, you have these teams who are relatively healthy and they just do enough to be able to get over the hump. And like I said last week, I don't see it with the Lions. Like, they're just a lucky team in the games that they're playing and the teams that they're playing. I think the schedule is a relatively easier one. They're all, you know, everybody in the NFC North is relatively playing the same schedule, but it's just, the Lions are doing enough just to squeak out these games. I don't think there's been a game that they've blown out anyone. They've literally won games within 3 points or more. I want to say it's almost maybe 8 or 9 of their games they've basically won within that. Like, it is just, this division is so up in the air for next year. Well, the offensive side of the ball for the Minnesota is not great, and then their defense is good. Packers, I was saying this last week, it's the same. It's their defense is not good, and their offense is good. Lions, it's their offense is okay, and their defense is not that great, but they do enough. The Bears, honestly, they get another piece or two on that defensive side of the ball, and they can stay healthy on the offensive side of the ball. Even with Matt Barkley, I can see this team winning the division next year. And like you said, it's just one or two pieces that they're missing. Just like the Cowboys from last year, they were basically just missing a running back and a healthy quarterback. And look at what it's doing to this team and how well they're doing. Like, it really is that for the Bears. Like, they are closer to winning a division than what I think most fans are realizing. And, that, and that's the sad part is, like, Bears fans, Chicago fans, we want to see our teams win, but they panic faster than they really should. Some of these teams, like, you can see the bright spots. You can see that it's just there's just one piece missing or two pieces missing before this team can turn a corner. And I think John Fox is the guy to be able to do that. You know, he's only in his second year, and normally his teams have turned a corner a little bit faster in the past, but he didn't really have that much to work with this season. A healthy team, this team is in the playoff hunt. There's no doubt in my mind that if this team was healthy throughout the season, that they should be right at, you know, right in the mix of it with the NFC North. All these teams are basically close to 800, you know, 500 teams. They're, you know, that's where the Bears realistically could be, if not a little bit better than that. So that's my take on the Bears. Like, honestly, I don't see them as a terrible team. They've just had the worst luck with injuries once again this season as they did last season.
Right, and as you mentioned, they're playing reserves. And the good thing about that, which is in their favor for turning it around next year, is it creates depth. So a lot of these players who are getting experience now, when they come back next season, if in fact someone does go down, they can step in, and then there won't be such a great fall off in terms of being able to play. And so, you know, that's something in their favor. Plus, you know, they'll have another season under the system, the offensive system. And I've often liked the Bears' pass rush. And it seems, you know, but all this talk about bringing in Bill Polley, and what is he, 74? And, you know, should they go in a different direction? Should they get rid of, you know, that's all craziness. You know, sometimes you pull the trigger too fast.
Yeah, you got to look at the situation that has happened. This is a situation, unlike the White Sox, where this is a this is where you need to be patient and not, you know, tear down the house, because realistically they're probably not bringing back Cutler, and that's probably fine. Like, they've shown that they can be within these games without having Cutler around. And so I don't think Cutler is that difference to make you get over the hump. I think it is possibly some secondary help, getting a little bit better there, and then, you know, finding some healthy wide receivers and tight end that, you know, can stay on the field. Because both years, these years have basically been almost identical to each other with injuries.
Right.
It's
Alshon's out.
Yeah. It's repeated itself.
White is out
once again. So that does make you think, okay, I think Alshon's at he's on the end of his contract. Do the Bears decide, okay, we're separating ourselves from the Cutler, and we're also going to separate ourselves from Jeffrey?
Well, it depends on who they're able to get. If they can get a really good prospect for a quarterback, you might want to look at Matt Barkley and then Connor Shaw. And then, of course, Brian Hoyer is still in the mix.
Yep.
So I think maybe if it's a cap situation, they might, you know, they could save some of that money that they would pay Cutler. And by going in a different direction. But if they don't find anything better, then they keep Cutler. Hopefully in year two, he'll be better in the offensive system. And same thing with Alshon. But I'm still interested to see what happens with Kevin White. And here's an interesting question.
Okay.
Victor Cruz. It seems like the Giants don't want him. So maybe he might be available.
Yeah, I think part of it is he's been still trying to come back fully from that Achilles injury. And it seems like it's actually flared up something in the opposite leg, because he's overcompensating. So from what I've been understanding, why Cruz has been out is because he still isn't fully 100%. Like, he's still, he's probably closer to 80% Victor Cruz. Now, given an entire offseason for him to try and get healthy, strengthen those legs a little bit more, then maybe you have closer to 100% Victor Cruz, and maybe that is a piece that the Giants are possibly going to part with, that the Bears could just, you know, try him out for a year or two, see what happens. But he is another person who potentially can just be another injury-prone wide receiver. Is that where the Bears want to go? Or will they try and find somebody who's had a little bit of a better health situation? Because normally wide receivers are relatively healthier than, say, the running back position. But for some reason on the Bears side of it, it's that's the position that has been extremely banged up these last few years. I hadn't heard that part
about Victor Cruz. Mm-hmm. I heard that he had a meeting with the offensive coordinator to find out why they hadn't been throwing the ball to him and hadn't been using him. I thought he was healthy enough, mm-hmm. but because the first game of the season they threw a touchdown pass to him, so I don't mm-hmm. know if he's having health issues, but I was just wondering why the Giants weren't using him. He was in the game this past weekend. I think they threw one pass to him. Mm-hmm. But I guess if you have Odell Beckham...
basically Odell Beckham and I think their rookie that they drafted to kind of replace Victor Cruz, Sterling Shepard, I think is his name.
So maybe they want to develop him. And
I think so.
And Cruz is just, yeah, maybe they're committing to the Odell Beckham era.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's what you're seeing with the Giants is they're realizing they have such a dominant piece in the receiving core with Odell Beckham and then with Sterling Shepard as that secondary option. They feel relatively confident in those two guys that they don't have to use Victor Cruz as often. And I don't know how many times they, you know, use a three receiver set. That's not something I've been able to pay attention to these last couple years without my sight, but I used to pay attention to that to determine, like, okay, are these pieces going to be regularly used and do they have a potential of being, especially for fantasy football, that's something you have to pay attention to see if you can get extra points. And so, like, when you look at the Packers, they're always in, like, a three receiver set. So you know that that team on a regular basis is going to probably have three receivers who are, you know, probably 80 to 100 yards. And then you have these other guys who are probably going to be sprinkled in 30 to 50 yards as well. And so the Packers pass a lot, and that's what the Giants try and do as well. They don't really have a running game. So you would think there's enough passing or in that offense to be able to give Victor Cruz more than just one pass, because of the talent he has, at least what we know of him when he was healthy. And I think we've seen glimpses of it this year. Like you said, in that first game, and I think it was third or fourth game of the season, he also had another touchdown. But the Giants' offense is one that, like me being a Cowboys fan, I pay attention to that division a little bit more. The Giants' offense always seems like they have no idea what they're doing half of the season, and then the other half they maybe figure it out, and then it's just – they get confused and then go back to not knowing what they want to do.
Either it works or it doesn't.
Right. And so it's just something where that team, if I was a Giants fan, I would be pulling my hair out like crazy, because they just don't understand what they want to do. They have no identity of if they want to be a running team or a passing team. And they don't basically jump all in into one or the other. The Bears themselves, I think they want to be a run first team, and I think so. I think John Fox, from what I know of him in his past and the teams that he's had, he likes to run first,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to build a strong defense. And I think that the offensive line being relatively banged up, that's kept him from being able to have that physical identity that a John Fox team is known for. Once that offensive line gets healthy and he's able to literally punch teams in their teeth, you know, the defenses in their teeth, I think that's where you see this this team really start to turn the corner. And so that's why it's really frustrating to watch the Bears these last couple of years, is because you're like, I can see it. It's there. Like, just come on, get healthy, get on the field, and let's see what this team really can do. And it just hasn't happened.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
But with a little luck. And next if they stick with it, I mean, look how long it took the Cubs to win the championship when they started rebuilding. And sometimes you just can't do it in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Everybody's expecting that because everyone talked about John Fox's miraculous ability. But, you know, every team is not going to be the same.
Right.
And there's no and we knew going into the season there was no depth with the Bears.
Right.
So we have what we have.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll hopefully they're in line to get the fourth pick unless they win some more games, and they have Green Bay left and they have Minnesota,
right,
and Washington,
mm-hmm.
So
all teams that they could possibly beat, but probably you could see these being losses too. And if that ends up being the fourth pick, I wonder what route that the Bears would decide to go. Like I said, I think it was a couple weeks ago that the quarterback class is kind of a little iffy. I wonder if they would possibly see what's available wide receiver-wise, see if they can find a really, really well-groomed rookie receiver that they can potentially see as that this is the piece that we want to build around a little bit more. I wonder if that's kind of the route that they decide to go. What do you think? If they had the fourth pick, would they go out?
I don't know. I think they should go get the best player that's available because there's a need on both sides of the ball, really.
Right. So, I agree.
They definitely shouldn't reach. They shouldn't just go after a quarterback because they feel that they need one.
Right.
They shouldn't reach for one if one's not there that they like, that they think will develop into a franchise quarterback. Then I wouldn't use the pick for that.
Right. All right. Well.
All right. Oh.
Anything else in the NFL that you'd like to touch on?
Well, just a couple of things.
Okay.
Just thoughts and observations. Number one.
Sure.
You mentioned Dallas.
Huh?
The last few weeks, Dak Prescott has been throwing more interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got me to thinking, now the Cowboys are in a situation where they're going to most likely have home field advantage at some point, if not throughout the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Is he ready to be a playoff quarterback? Can he handle that pressure, the intensity? He's never done it before. And, you know, what they say, that the playoffs are at a different level. Can he maintain his play at the level during the season? And even if he does do that, is that enough for the playoffs? I don't know. Like I said before, I wouldn't be surprised to see Tony Romo pop up again.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are actually in a relatively good position to have Dak being as good as he's been this entire season, because if they do decide that, okay, we have our backup who has been in the playoffs a few times, has gotten that monkey off his back a couple years ago with being able to get us past the first round of the playoffs, and if they do have the home field advantage, I think that does kind of bode well for them. I think it ends up being, I think they could win either, like with either one, but who they feel more comfortable with. I think if you ask Jerry Jones, he will tell you Tony Romo is probably going to be the quarterback for the playoffs. If you ask the rest of that team, I think they've basically gotten back. They've gotten behind Dak, and they believe they can win with the team they have that they've been playing with all this year. I think the Giants are just one of those teams where they know how to prepare for teams that have been world beaters for everybody else. They, defensively, they know how to stop teams a little bit better than what other teams do. You saw it a few years ago. It's been more than a few years now. But even when they were in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, when the Patriots were on that, you know, amazing season of being undefeated, and then all of a sudden the Giants come in the Super Bowl and are able to win. I think it's just the Giants are a team that just knows how to prepare for these really, really tough teams. And the Giants and Cowboys know each other so well that it's just a really, really tough matchup. But if I was in the coach's position, what would I do? I think you have to stick with who's gotten you there. Would they be in the same position that they are in with Romo? Possibly. But I think a lot of what you saw through the season in games that were really tough, you saw Dak using his legs to get touchdowns and to be able to get these first downs that you're not entirely sure if Romo would have been able to make those same plays. So, yes, he's maybe made a few more mistakes these last couple weeks, but I'd rather him get these mistakes out now and him seeing these, you know, these teams are wanting to beat the Cowboys because they were on a 10-game winning streak, so they're playing a little bit harder than what you would normally see on a normal week. Maybe this is teams that have been out of it, or like Giants, they're fighting for their, you know, to get into the playoffs because the rest of the division is so close. So the Cowboys maybe were playing a little bit more, you know, maybe too comfortable. They're feeling like they could go in and beat anyone and felt like they could do that with the Giants, and the Giants brought it to them. So at the moment, I still think that it's still Dak's team. But at any moment, they can decide, you know what, Romo's going to be the one to take us the rest of the way. He's been in these situations before. We're going to go with that guy that we can somewhat trust in these situations because we've seen it before.
So if Dak goes to the playoffs and he throws interceptions or not playing particularly well, you expect a quick hook, and in comes Romo?
If that ends up happening, that it's a situation that you're in the playoffs and he's throwing interceptions, and yeah, you probably do because you're playing for your season. Like, it's you're, you know, one and done basically. If you lose, you're out. And so I think that happens with any quarterback, really. But he hasn't shown that a lot throughout the season. So you're going to have a bad game. Like, even the best quarterbacks in the NFL have had their 2-3 interception games. Like Peyton Manning, there was a couple years in a row that he would play San Diego and he would throw 4 interceptions whenever he'd play San Diego. No, not against any other team, but San Diego, he would throw 4 interceptions. It seemed like it was 2 or 3 years in a row that he did it. So, I don't know. I think you just have bad games at times. It's hard to be able to keep up the consistency that he had, especially as a rookie. You have teams that are continuing to have more film on him and being able to game plan and seeing what he does well and what he doesn't handle as well. And so it's up to Dak to be able to adjust to that. And we'll see how it ends up going over these next few weeks. He does still have, what, 3 more weeks of the regular season to see how he can prepare for these last few games, because I believe there's one more against the Eagles, and they're going to be preparing to try and still try and get in the playoffs. I don't think they will. The Redskins are the team that is probably going to get into the playoffs if the Giants don't. So, yeah, it's just where Dak is at. He just has to. We have to see the adjustment. If he doesn't make an adjustment and he's continuing over these last 3 games to make those mistakes, then I wouldn't be surprised to see Romo come back in.
All right.
So,
and just one other observation.
Sure.
Is it me, or are we seeing less of the New England Patriots than we have in other seasons, considering the national games? It seems like for years, if there's a 3 o'clock game, it's the Patriots and someone else. They were sort of the marquee team. They were the team that everybody would show on their broadcast, particularly. And this year, given their record, I don't think we're seeing them as often as we have in the past. And is that fallout from the Deflategate? Is it New England old hat, or is the NFL moving on?
Here's at least for this season, this is what I've kind of noticed is, for me, the competition has seemed to be relatively lacking. Like, the Patriots have played, it's the AFC North that they've been playing, the NFC West, and then their own division. Now, in their own division, you have the Bills, you have the Jets, terrible team, and you have the Dolphins, all teams that probably they haven't really done very well in these last few seasons against the Patriots, and they've been blowouts. So a lot of people might not really, other than their fans, be paying attention to this, you know, to those games.
But it's always been like that for years.
It's been like that for years, but I think then you start, the NFL is starting to adjust for the games that they feel are going to be competitive. The games that you saw the Patriots be in, like, primetime or in these later games, you saw that Seattle game. That was a game that everybody was looking forward to, that you felt that it was going to be competitive. It was. Seattle won. The other game would have been probably, it was the Steelers and the Patriots, and that one was a late game. I think it was the Phil Sims and the Phil Sims game. And so you don't really have a lot of games this season. Like, you're not going to want to watch the Patriots versus San Francisco. Like, that was going to be, everybody felt it was going to be a blowout. So I just think it's more of the competition that they were going to play. They played the Browns. Like, the Browns haven't won a game. Are you really going to want to watch a Patriots-Browns game? Unless you like blowouts, then yeah. And you're a Patriots fan, you'll watch it. Everybody else doesn't want to watch that game. So I think it's just more of, like, the way that the season laid out, they've had a relatively easier schedule. And I think it just has a lot to do with, like, the competition in the NFL really is, you have these, like, maybe three or four teams that are good, and the rest of them are probably middle of the pack. So it makes it really, really tough for you to have a Patriots, Peyton Manning type game. Like, those were games that you always looked forward to, Roethlisberger and Brady. Like, those were games that you were looking forward to because you had a feeling that these games were going to be shootouts and that people were going to really want to pay attention to them, because you just have these guys who do really, really well against each other. They step up their game, and they're just fun games to watch. I haven't had that feeling with the Patriots this year. None of the games, like, there was basically, it was the Seattle game and maybe the Pittsburgh game. That those were the only two games on their season that I would want to pay attention to. None of the other games did I really want to pay attention to. The only other one maybe would have been Baltimore and Patriots.
Right.
Would you have wanted to pay attention to any of those other games, really, with what you've seen with the NFL?
Well, the other games being games that when Tom Brady was out, started by their backup quarterback. And right. I think he played well. And so that story was sort of blunted, you know, and then Tom Brady comes back and the Patriots just go on and continue to win.
Yep.
So, I haven't seen them as much, especially, like I said, for being a team that has a very good record. I think they have, 10 or 11 wins now?
Yep.
So they're right there. And when you look at the NFL now, I was thinking, who do you favor to be in the Super Bowl? I mean, you have these good teams. You have Dallas, you have Kansas City, you have New England, you have Pittsburgh. But none of these teams are what I would consider, like, in past years, the odds-on favor to at least make the Super Bowl. Like, last year, you knew that Denver is probably going to go to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I don't feel like any of the teams I could hang that mantle on. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a little bit tougher this year. I think, at least from my point of view, the teams that I see at least getting, you having the AFC and NFC championship game, I can see it being basically, on the NFC side of it, it's probably Seahawks and Dallas, at least the way the teams are playing currently. And then on the AFC, I see it as probably, I still think it's probably, like, Patriots and, I want to say it's probably someone from the AFC North, either Baltimore or the Steelers. Those are the two teams that I feel like probably can get there. Other than that, I really don't have any confidence in any of the other teams. Like, can Kansas City possibly? Yeah, maybe. But I just haven't seen anything in their playoffs from last year and even from this year to feel like, okay, if you stop basically their run game, you're probably okay. That defense is good. But I think if they go up against New England is going to win that game. And I think if they go up against the Steelers, The Steelers have already beat Kansas City earlier this season by a lot. They like beat them by 35 the first time. So unless Kansas City has the home field advantage, when they're at home, they're a totally different team than when they're on the road. Yeah. So like,
and then there's Oakland. So
offensively, that's a very, very, good team, and they could sneak in. They honestly, that's a team that I could see them possibly sneaking in. But like I said, there's something about, like, it's just, it's Patriots and somebody else. Like, you almost feel like you have to kind of, as Brady and Belichick are there, it's always going to be an NFC championship probably with the Patriots. Unless Brady's hurt or out of it. Like, that's the only way I see the Patriots not making it to the NFC championship game.
Hmm. Well, it should shape up to be an exciting playoff.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot more teams closer together than anyone, like any dominant team. So that's why I say, like, on the AFC side of it, it's a little bit harder to say, like, that anyone's going to catch up with the Patriots. But the NFC, I think, honestly, with the Cowboys and Seahawks and, you know, I think the Giants will probably be in there. They're going to be a tough team to beat. They always play well in the playoffs. And then I don't trust the Lions. I think they're out in the wild card game.
And then Green Bay, they're getting hot at the right time, right? I suppose.
So
if their quarterback is healthy enough to continue.
I told my friend at the beginning of the year that the two teams that I thought actually were going to be going to the Super Bowl, I believe I told him. What did I tell him? I told him I believe the Bengals were going to go to the Super Bowl. Mm. I'm totally wrong on that one.
And the Cardinals?
Yeah, the Bengals is who I thought. I thought they were going to finally turn that corner. They were going to be healthy and be able to actually get that first playoff win out off, you know, off their back. And then I think I said Seattle for the NFC. So I didn't even think, like, once Romo went down, I didn't even think the Cowboys had a chance. So I wasn't even on the bandwagon for the Cowboys. I just thought it was going to be probably a Seattle Bengals Super Bowl. But I said that it was going to be Patriots and Bengals in the AFC side of it, and then it was going to be Seahawks and Vikings, I think is what I said. Yeah. So I don't know if the Vikings are going to have enough to be able to do it. They don't seem to be finding enough offense to do so. I think we spent enough on the football.
Yeah.
Let's move on to, I'll let you pick, Bulls or Blackhawks.
Let's go with Bulls.
Okay. So, go ahead and let's see what you got with the Bulls. What are you seeing?
Not much. It seems like they are a team that has a good starting five that can compete, but they don't have a bench. And even with McDermott back now, it's gotten a little bit better. But, you know, after last night losing to the Timberwolves, a team they at one point led by 21 points, I don't know.
It's a team that they're not very good at closing out games, and that's interesting, because you would think having a Wade and having a Butler, two guys who can close the game, they're not doing it, and that's really frustrating. You see this team pulling out in front of teams, normally 15 points or more, it seems like, every game that they're playing. Fourth quarter comes around, and they're just squeaking games out. I don't know if it ends up being the bench late in the game is giving back a game, or if it's actually just a combination of both the bench and the starters just running out of gas. They put so much into putting up that lead that they don't have any left for the end of the game. I don't think that's the case. Like, these guys are supposed to be, you know, conditioned enough to be able to get through a game, and they're used to having their specific, you know, shifts during games of being able to have the first team they'll play, you know, your starters will play the first 8, 9, 10 minutes of the game, and then you'll have your bench start to come in, and they'll play the first few minutes of the second quarter, and then your starters come back in to finish out that last, you know, 8 minutes or so of the first half. And it's the same, basically the same thing in the second half. So these guys shouldn't be, like, overly tired. I don't know what it is. I don't know why they are crushing teams the first three quarters of the game, and then they just take the pedal off the metal and let all these teams back in and let them think that they can win, and they end up, these teams do squeak them out and end up beating the Bulls more than they probably should. And that intensity has to stay all four quarters. You can't just play three quarters of a game, because the NBA is very, very competitive, and you have these teams who are going to compete all the way through. They're not going to give up if they're down 15 points going into the fourth quarter. They're professionals. They're getting paid a lot of money to try and make a comeback. And you're playing Chicago and a team that Michael Jordan built, and there's still that stigma that teams still want to just, they want to beat the Bulls. They're playing lackadaisical when it comes down to the most intense part of the game.
Yeah, and I think it didn't help that Wade only had 12 points last night.
Yeah,
And the bench, oh my gosh. McDermott, 8 points. Mirotić, 5. Felicio, 4. And Cannon, 6. And that's not getting it done.
No.
But... And I think that the starters for the Timberwolves just outscored the Bulls, mostly because they hit a few more three-pointers. The Minnesota was 6 of 21, whereas the Bulls were 4 of 15. And Cannon, who's supposed to be a three-point shooter, 0 for 3. Mirotić, 0 for 4. McDermott, 0 for 1. And, you know, I like that McDermott slashes to the basket and lays the ball up and tries to slam it. But... you know, he also can shoot the three, so
right.
Maybe he could sort of try and figure out a better balance between shooting a three and slashing.
Yes.
But I think it's difficult to maintain that type of lead, a 21-point lead, against any team in the NBA that has talented players. Because, like you said, there is the fatigue factor. And then... when your bench comes in, they may not be as active.
Right.
So, and certainly that's, except for McDermott, kind of the case with the Bulls. And I think that's where they lost the game. They only lost it by 5 points. So if you get a few more points from Wade and, you know, some of the other players, then perhaps they could have won that game. But, I think that... the Bulls are just, the season is wearing on them, and they're coming back after, you know, starting out and having, I think they had maybe a 2 or 3 game lead. Now it's just down to 2. And they're still only 5.5 games back of Cleveland, and they're in second place in the Central Division. So, things aren't that bad.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a bench that we thought was going to be relatively deep and that we were going to see some scoring out of. And unfortunately, right now they are slumping or don't have that intensity or who knows what it is. But right now it's not looking very pretty. But you need those bench guys to come around. So hopefully that does happen, because otherwise it's going to be a very, very... tough season, and probably those starters are going to run out of gas because they can only do so much.
Well, yeah, I think that might be kind of happening now. And even if they get Michael Carter-Williams back, or when they get him back, he should be back maybe in a week or so.
Yeah.
I don't even know how much of a difference that would make. But the question is, if the Bulls are still in second place in the Central, do you think they'll go out and get some players to add or make some moves? Or no?
I think they have, like, if they really feel like this is a year that they can take down Cleveland, they've beaten them already once. In a series, would you be able to do that? Probably not. Playoffs are totally different. So if they believe that they can actually take down Cleveland with a move, I could see them trading some pieces away. Now, where do they have depth and where do they need help? The depth is at the guard position. Now, what teams need guards and have a surplus of big men? Because that's really, I think, where the Bulls kind of need some extra help. And maybe a shooter. Probably, I definitely, a shooter, not a maybe. So that's the hard part is shooting guards are really hard to find, and the surplus of big men, that's another tough one. So yes, they need something. They need probably two pieces, a shooting guard and another big guy. What team that is, I'm not sure. Could it be Memphis? That's probably the team that I can kind of think of that have a few big guys. Who they'd be willing to give, I'm not sure. I think they're in the playoff hunt, so would they be willing to give up pieces? Probably not. It would have to be a team that's out of it or feels like they're out of it. So, yeah, that's a tough one. I'd have to really kind of, like, figure out where teams are at. You maybe could see something with, like, the Kings. I think that maybe, I don't know if they'd be willing to give up Cousins, but I think they have, like, three or four big guys that they have. But would you want one of those other guys besides Cousins? Cousins would be that piece that would put you close to where the Cavs are at. I don't think it puts them, like, completely over the top to be able to beat the Cavs, but I think it makes them closer to make that series very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
That at the moment is probably the team that I could see them potentially looking at, and then what Sacramento would want in return, I'm not sure. But that's probably the team I would look at.
Well, I just would want to avoid another Cleveland Warriors final.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. I'm kind of tired of seeing Cleveland there, and I'm pretty tired of seeing the Warriors there. It's basically, this would be 3 years in a row. Yeah, right? 3 years in a row that you'd be basically seeing Cleveland.
Yeah, if they go this year, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, that would be kind of frustrating to see the dominance of these, just basically you knowing that at the start of the season that these were going to be the two teams in the finals. That's doesn't really make the season very fun to watch if you already know the end outcome, and that's where most people feel. It's Cleveland in the East, and it's Warriors in the West, and that's what people have picked for the, you know, last year, and that's what people feel it's going to be this year. So when you don't have that, like, level of competition that you feel like somebody's going to be able to knock off these teams, it makes the season a little bit more boring, I guess.
Yeah, and quietly, Golden State has 22 wins and 4 losses, who are the best record in the NBA.
They are actually playing better this year, like, as an entire team. They're, like, shooting percentage is higher. Each one of them are shooting less but making more shots. And it's because they can't double-team anyone. That team is basically, you have to play them one-on-one. You can't double-team a specific player because they can hurt you pretty much from all of the position, like at least 4 positions. So that 5th position, they find that 5th guy, whoever it ends up being, and that guy scores. So it's just really, really tough on any defense that plays the Warriors. You have to have 5 good defenders. And the NBA, barely any team plays defense at all. So it's going to be hard to beat that team. Cleveland's going to have to probably, you know, defensively, they're the only team that can probably lock them down. They seem to have all of the same pieces that they had last year. And that's how they won those games to be able to come back in that series, was by basically playing really, really tough defense and getting in their face and being physical with them. That's kind of how you beat the Warriors, is you kind of have to foul these guys, got to get chippy with them, get in their head, like get Draymond Green to get a little, you know, get him becoming his baby side of himself coming out from time to time. When you can get in their head, that's what Cleveland did. That's how they were able to come back in that series and win, is basically just beating this team up. And that, because they're not a physical team. They're all finesse and they're all run and gun. You start to slow that down by slowing down the pace of the game with fouling them and making them have to work. That's the only way you're going to do it. And no team plays them like that, because they're so quick and they just pass the ball outlets and they're getting, you know, layups on a regular basis or shooting a three from half court and making them. It's just, it's hard, but I think it's possible. It's just, you're, like I said, you're going to have to play a very physical game with that team and just be patient and wear them down. Well, we only have one team left, one sport left, and that's the Blackhawks in the NHL. Seen anything with this team? They seem to be kind of, what, about a 500 team these last couple weeks. They've been doing okay. Not terrible.
But, you know, they're still amongst the top three teams in the NHL, and they're getting Seabrook and Taves back. So
Yeah, they're getting healthy again. That's good. I think we're still waiting on Crawford. It's probably going to be a little bit. I think, as what I heard, it's going to be some time before he comes back. But they're doing okay. And them getting healthier again, getting your, you know, Captain Sirius back, Jonathan Toews, and then Seabrook, your probably best offensive defenseman back, that helps as well. So I feel okay with how they were able to get through those injuries. And now that they're getting healthy again, I think you're going to start to see a couple more runs again with this team. They have enough firepower, I believe, to be able to stay at the top. I haven't seen any other teams in the West that really has shown any consistency to kind of knock them off or, you know, pull away. I think it's relatively competitive in the West, and so I think that the Blackhawks, I still feel they have those core guys that are able to push us over the top more than what most teams have.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the younger guys are getting experience, and it seems that the management is doing a good job of bringing in, you know, prospects and newer mm-hmm. players to fill in. So.
This is a team that's very impressive with what they're able to do with the way the salary cap is and what the Blackhawks potentially could be with could do if the salary cap, because the Blackhawks salary cap wouldn't mean anything to them. Like, they are one of the most followed teams. If there wasn't a salary cap, they probably could win every single year. But that's why they have a salary cap, is to try and make it as evenly matched as possible. But even with it, the Blackhawks seem to still figure out a way to stay competitive every single year and get the most out of the players they bring in. And it's really, really awesome to see that. And I think with Coach Q and what Bowman are doing with this team every single year, you can't help but feel like each year that the Blackhawks are playing with the guys that they have, that they could make a Stanley Cup run. I feel that's still the case this year. Could they use another piece or so? Yeah, they probably could. But can they do it with what they have already? I think they possibly could do it as well. These young players are actually stepping up better than what I was expecting them to do so early. And as the season goes on, I think they're going to continue to get a little bit better. You know, they're going to sharpen their skills a little bit more, understand the game and the speed that they're playing at. And I think it's just, this team is going to continue to get better. It just has to, they have to stay healthy. As long as they stay healthy, this team should be, you know, competing for another Stanley Cup, I think, at the end of the season.
I think so, yeah.
Anything else with the NHL? There wasn't much that I really wanted to talk about. I think they won last night, right?
Yeah.
Yep. They were in New York. I don't think there was anything that really stuck out to me too much from the NHL. Normally, it's a relatively quiet sport. There's not too many things that pop up too much.
Yeah, they just play the games.
I want to say there's a player from a Canadian league that ended up getting paralyzed, that a lot of players were kind of like, you know, tweeting about and putting prayers up for. Well, you never want to see that. It was just a really, really bad hit that this kid took, and so you never like to see that. But that was probably the only thing that I kind of saw that very rarely happens. I don't remember what the player's name was and what team they played for, but I did remember seeing that. I think it was last week sometime.
Wow. Yeah, you never want to see that. That's tough.
Yep. Well, I think we're going to wrap this one up, Ryan. We're going to put a bow on it.
All right.
All right. My name is Brett Shishkoff.
I'm Brian Hawkins.
And this is the No Look Pass. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you next time.